Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
You can answer this honestly, and we won't get upset at all with you, Cammy. Do you look at the Welsh squad right now and think, with all them injuries, and think they're a weakened team, they're not the Wales we were expecting to meet, you know, a year ago or so? Do you think that, yeah, they're there for the taking?
But I think on paper, regardless of which Wales lineup was starting, I would have expected Scotland to win anyway.
Wow, that's a big statement, Cammy. Rage of Wales, everyone's going crazy.
That's a massive statement.
Play to.
But what a start for Wales. Victory here, 4 tries, 34 points to 7. Wales are up and running.
Hello and welcome to the Scottish Rugby Blog podcast. I am Cammy Black and I'm joined this evening by Rory Baldwin.
Hello.
And John Anderson.
Hi there.
Head, heart and arse.
It should be fine. Let me just check. It's fine. Hang on. Yeah, that's fine. You can't hear us over that. Good, lovely. So it's head, heart and arse time. We'll look back at the game against Wales and then ahead to the game against France on Sunday. Now the whole idea of head, heart and arse is in looking back at the game. Head is the fair-minded reasoned analysis, heart the emotional response, and arse is the negative. So shall we just crack straight on and do arse, chaps?
I think it was pretty much all arse anyway, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. What was the biggest arse for you, Rory?
I think probably just the shock of it being kind of unexpected. Like I said earlier in Hands in the Ruck, we weren't expecting that to happen, so it was a little bit more shocking. I think it was just, you know, they just look so sort of so directionless. It's funny because I mean it's almost directionless direction, because they sort of looked like they were doing something. There was plenty of industry. It's not like they weren't trying. It's just that they weren't really doing anything very well, and the number of sort of individual errors and stuff was shocking. I mean, Wales played probably as good a game as they've played in about 5 years. It was pretty grim, and it was probably one of the biggest arses was when they came out after half time and you thought, okay, it's only 14-0. This Scotland team have got tries in them. If Tooney's turned it around and somehow, you know, he's clicked his fingers and the Scotland we were expecting are back, then actually 14-0, that's pretty doable. And then they just conceded two quick penalties for exactly the same thing, and you were just thought, no, that's it. They're not coming back from that, because they just didn't look kind of capable of it. And I don't like to single out Barkley, because I think he's been an excellent captain, but you know, those two penalties, he was pinged for one, and then he did it exactly the same again. I mean, maybe it wasn't until the second one he got the talking to from the ref as to what he was doing. It looked like he was placing his hands kind of on the ground beyond the tackle, and then going for the ball, and the ref was saying, you know, just get down there and get straight up the ball. I mean, I guess he was doing that to sort of balance himself or something, so he couldn't be cleared out as easily. But yeah, it was just at that point you just thought, no, how do they get back? How do they get back into this? They're not going to.
Yeah, I think that was my ass. Was just the mental side of it. I think it was worrying that Toulouse, I think, came out this week and has said that 14-0 down the heads went, and you just think, I don't get how a sort of supposedly professional international team at international level can get to 14-0 down and completely lose it. And maybe I don't know if it comes down to the mental preparation. Like we were joking earlier with Graham's letter to Jim Telfer about this idea that you're going down to play this. The Principality Stadium, which is one of the biggest stadiums in the country, you've got the roof closed, you're going to have all that noise, and yet he's prepared players all week doing this sort of high stress training where they're supposed to be able to think on the feet and deal with any situation in front of them, but then wraps them in cotton wool and keeps them at Murrayfield until the very last minute, and then just pretty much throws them in front of 75,000 people all making that noise and says, get on with it. I don't think you can prepare for that in training as much as you can do. You need to go and be amongst the thick of it, and they probably should have gone down 2 days earlier. And I would imagine being in a strange strange hotel using different facilities must have give some sort of help in preparing you mentally for the fact that you are going to go and play away from home.
I totally agree. It just doesn't seem like that. I'm sure there's a reason for that preparation, and like you say, it probably is kind of comfort, familiarity, but actually that's exactly what playing away from home is not about. I did see, I can't remember, I was on some, I think it was the Planet Rugby forum having a look earlier, and I did see some I'm going to guess he was an Australian wag suggesting the one thing that Scotland find out about playing away from home is that you can't rig the opposition's training grounds, which is presumably a dig at the rubbish conditions at Perth Mill that Australia had. And I could have pointed out to him that actually that didn't happen to Scotland because they trained at home. But
yeah, John, you're us.
Yeah, so I totally agree with you guys in terms of the mental preparation. I think it would be quite interesting to actually find out, or do a bit of digging into what other teams, particularly in the Six Nations, because it's bloody hard to win away from home anywhere other than Rome. But for me, the stats don't lie, unfortunately. But for me, I think funny, I've actually said the term "the stats don't lie," and I'm just going to say this. But the line-out was an absolute joke. It was incredibly bad. And I know the official stats or the ESPN stats or whatever said we'd only lost one line-out, but that doesn't tell the tale. It was disrupted ball every single time. There was plenty of squint ball as well. I don't know what went wrong. It was a strength in the autumn. And
yes, I mean, the speed that like McAnally and Toulouse and Gray were getting, they were lining up, boom, they were throwing it. It was yep. Quick, clean ball, and it was away. The line-out was, I think, it was maybe one or two across the three games that wasn't, that was certainly the impression you got. It was almost like the line-out was, it seemed flawless. And then to suddenly become
disintegrated.
Whether they just studied the video really well and figured it out, or whether, Alan Wynne-Jones is no mug. He knows what he's doing in a set piece, and they just, it crumbled under the pressure, and that almost, I think, that took away one of the ways for Scotland to get the ball away quickly. And I guess throwing passes to the ground probably didn't help too much.
No, and there was no speed at all either. I mean, you think about that game against Australia where they were just, like you said, Rory, walking up and throwing, almost within a split second of the line-out forming. That just wasn't there at all.
Yeah. Which is odd, whether they've decided that they needed something a bit more measured, but it would seem, that is actually one of the things that worked. I mean, yeah, okay, your defence might figure you out, but there should be nothing stopping you from taking a quick line out, even sort of 70,000 screaming Welsh people.
I was shocked when it was clear it wasn't working. There was a couple opportunities where we're sort of taking the ball, and there was the opportunity to go quickly. And in the autumn, that's a no-brainer. The ball gets passed and we go. And it just seemed like the guys, they froze. And the idea of playing this quick brand of rugby, they just totally lost confidence in that. And so quickly, it was really disheartening to watch.
What shall we do next? Shall we do Hart? Let's do Hart next. We'll go backwards. John, your sort of emotional take from that game.
I think there's some written words that support my emotional take from it. Yeah, I was just extremely sad. I was saddened watching it because yet again, it's you go into the tournament with the hope, the expectation. This is possibly the first time in years we've actually went in and I genuinely thought we had a decent run and a decent chance at doing well in this tournament. And if we play anywhere near as badly as we did this weekend, we will be lucky to walk away without the wooden spoon.
Or anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I mean. If we play as badly as last weekend in any of the other games, we're going to finish bottom. So, yeah, just really, really disappointed.
Rory, your sort of emotional heart takeaway from the game.
It was
apart from ruining your birthday.
Yeah, apart from my birthday was the day before, so I had a cold ruined my birthday, but I thought the Six Nations was going to cheer it up. But I think they can't possibly play as bad as that again. That's the fervent hope.
Yeah, I think for me the sort of frustrating thing emotionally was that from a large portion of the team there was no sort of controlled aggression or passion at all, apart from maybe the exception of definitely Hoggy, who has responded to the loss by just going back to Hoik and posting photos of Hoik on Instagram because he's so depressed. And Hamish Watson, who just, you know, never stopped the entire game. He was about the only one grabbing the game by trying to just sort of get some go forward, even when the game was well lost. He was the only one that kept going. And, it, you know, that's at 14-0 down, that's what you needed. But the heads went down and there's nobody. Yeah. It's hard to see. And I don't know if that comes from Barclay as a captain. Maybe he's too, I don't know if he's too laid back in the way that he's communicating, in the way that he G's guys up. It seems to me that when Scotland aren't on the front foot, heads go down and there's nobody sort of willing to step up and say, look, we're still in this, let's go out and smash them back, or even just stick the ball up the jumper for a little bit and sap the momentum out of the game.
Yeah, because I mean that was a thing. I'm trying to think who it was. I mean, it might have been when with more performances in Laidlaw, but certainly last year there were games, and you see it with Glasgow when Glasgow are having a good game, when if someone scores on them, they just say, okay, we'll go up the other end and score.
Yeah,
and we've seen them do it. So the first, you know, you thought interception try, okay, that was a bit crap, but you know they'll come back against that. They'll bounce back, and I think it was just not seeing that, as you say, just usually there's a determination because the defence is often a little bit flaky. We rarely see perfect defensive performances from Scotland, but that's kind of counterbalanced by the fact that, you know, they're good for two or three tries a game, at the least. And I guess they're finding out that the Six Nations maybe is a different beast. But even last year's Six Nations, you know, they were scoring plenty of tries, and it's just, where was the, who is it that drives them to just to get up and to go back, to go back up the other end and score? I mean, I don't know. Maybe Barclay was a little bit. It was probably quite strange for Barclay having to be extremely competitive against 10 guys who he probably considers amongst his best friends. You know,
yes,
who are almost part of his family, and now he's having to try and kind of, he's having, you know, he's trying to break their hearts. effectively. A lot of them, getting debuts or early, low numbers of caps, and this is them on their home turf, and it must have been quite strange for him.
Yeah.
And whether that maybe affected his performance, I have no idea. I'm sure he wouldn't probably admit to it. But he did certainly seem a little out of sorts. I mean, I thought he started very well. He was flying about, throwing himself into things in the first few minutes. But then, after that, between 6 and 12 minutes, they all looked a bit... they were even starting to look a little tired. And, they just looked shell-shocked. And I don't think, in honesty, they ever really recovered from that opening spell.
Kind of came across as they weren't able to blow them off the park in the first 6 minutes, despite all the possession they had. And it was like we haven't won the game in 6 minutes, so the heads went down, and then the interception. It was just I've never seen the like of it. It was really, really strange.
The first Wales try comes from, because I was watching I did watch the highlights briefly earlier on, and the first Wales try comes from that Johnny Gray break. He breaks, gets close to the try line, and then 5 minutes or whatever it was later, then there's an intercept. And, I don't get why the thinking isn't then, oh, look, well, we were up there earlier. It was one mistake. Let's get on with it. Yeah. Yeah.
Strange. I think with Barclay as well, it was really interesting. I think, communication-wise, he didn't seem to be so, thinking quite a lot about the couple of penalties in the second half, and it seemed his communication style at the weekend was just to stare at the referee with a sort of almost Greg Laidlaw-esque, like, what are you talking about, ref? I didn't see much communication from him, which was a bit he's had better days in the office, let's be honest.
I actually thought we had the referee up until about 50 minutes. I thought the referee was probably 50-50 on the calls, and then after about 50 minutes, you could just see after that he just was going to penalise for Scotland for absolutely everything on the deck.
There's a couple. It wasn't the same. It wasn't the same referee as the Calcutta Cup, was it? Because there's a couple of the French referees, certainly is one of them.
Same guys, the Australia Open.
So maybe he was expecting a bit more change or didn't get it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not going to come out and slag off the referee. I mean, I think probably at least one bonus from that game is that nobody was talking about the referee afterwards. in some respects, maybe it's a pleasure that we're not whinging about the referee after that game, but. I'm sure somebody will find something to whinge about at the referee in that game if it comes down to bonus points or something at the top of the table come the tournament end, because there was a few Welsh tries that I think were a little bit debatable, and England or Ireland might have something to say about those.
Yeah, let's get our heads back on. Let's do a reasoned look back then. What, from a head point of view, in your sort of reasoned analysis of this, John, what was it that went wrong, or what's your takeaway from the game?
So I think we have to be clear. I think Wales were really good. Wales played. It turns out Gatland's not as big a mug as we all thought. who'd have thought international coach knows what he's doing? No, I thought Wales were very good, and they defended exceptionally well. Our strike runners had no time on the ball, and I think you'll find with France at the weekend, the first thing they'll be doing is sending big defenders up Finn Russell's channel to try and rattle him, because if you shut off the space and shut off the time, which, rush defence, perfect, you can get to Scotland and you can stop them playing. And there didn't seem to be a plan B, which, that's been mentioned in the past. I think we have to also note, though, Scotland, and this is something I was criticised for, obviously, with the player ratings, the suggestion that these players have become bad players overnight. That's absolutely not what we're saying. They didn't turn up on the day, and so be it, right? We do move on. And these are still exceptionally gifted players who have the potential to compete against any side in the world, and they will do so. And I fully expect a backlash at the weekend from them. I'm absolutely certain we'll see a vastly improved Scotland performance.
I think for me, my head was that It's the Tony Tombola, and Andy Nicol was talking before the game about the difference between sort of the club game and international level. Is at club level, you know, the Aviva Premiership, the Pro 14, you get a split second to make your decision, whereas at international level you get no time at all. And I feel sorry for Chris Harris, because in the 20 minutes he had against Samoa, he made a mistake and Samoa scored that try. And I just think, I mean, he's 27, I'm just not sure that he's got the speed of thought or the ability to play the game at this level. And that might be harsh, but I'm not really sure. He might be able to do it in training. Townsend said he reads the game very well defensively. I'm sure he does, but I think whether you can then transfer that and do it a bit like, was it Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, where they said, can you do it amidst distraction? You know, can you do it when there's explosions going off around you, when Maid Marian's blowing softly on your cheek?
Or Scott Johnson.
Yeah. You know, can you do it whilst, you know, you've got 75,000 Wales fans cheering? And that's the question. And I'm not sure that Chris Harris can do it. And I think, you know, props mature late. I think maybe at national centres, I think if you've got to 27 and you're not an internationalist, then you have to question why. Cornel Dupriez, I thought he was getting to grips with international rugby by the end of the autumn, but there was just nothing there at all. He made two tackles all game.
Missed one,
did he as well? And Ryan Wilson, who replaced him, made seven, you know, and played less time. Made 6 metres all game, which for number eight is just abysmal. And even Byron McGuigan, I don't know. I watched the highlights of the Australia game back, and I'm not. I just wonder whether or not when the team's on the front foot and when people around him are performing well, when everybody, you know, the other 14 are doing well, he's the kind of player that will get on the end of things. But I'm not. I think, you know, Seymour and Hogg were trying to make things happen, but every time McGuigan got the ball, he just was isolated and he seemed to get turned over.
He slowed down into contact as well. There was a couple of instances where he's carrying the ball up and it's not even like he's looking for a gap. He actually nearly stopped, and it looked like he was scared. And there was one, Alamon Jones absolutely flattened him. You're like, I wouldn't be slowing down for that, mate. speed up into it, get it over with quicker. That's I was really disappointed in McGuigan.
Yeah.
I thought he was really poor.
And I can't remember, was it Kevin, top of the moon, Kevin Miller, was he writing on our blog? How many players did he say Tooney's selected so far for Scotland? Is it something ridiculous? Like, it's not.
Was it 50 or something?
I feel like.
I can't more.
Fine, I'll have a look.
I'm sure. Yeah. I think it might be something daft like 50 or 70 even. It's just, and I'm not sure. I think it might, you know, that might work at Glasgow. I'm not sure you can do the Tooney Tombola at international level, especially in a game against Wales. I think it's fine in the summer, maybe even in sort of the Fiji and Samoa type tests in the autumn, but I think when you I think you need to come down to sort of a settled side and have players that can come in, slot in. But I don't think you can sort of chance the likes of Chris Harris against Wales in the opening game of the Six Nations away from home.
Yeah, that's why Tooney gets paid the big bucks, isn't it? Because at the end of the day, it's his reputation and his head that goes with that. And you know, frankly, if he makes the call with Harris, and we all, I know certainly I was looking at the team and went, oh right, all right, okay. So Dunbar's out, Jones is going to 12, right? Harris,
yeah,
all right. And if it comes off and he has game of his life, defensive colossus, and we win that game, fine. Tooney's judgment, he's a genius. If it goes like it did on Saturday, we all start going, in Tooney we trust.
I find the stat, it was total number of players used by Tooney to 50 in his seventh game, including nine debuts.
Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting actually that he picked Harris at 13, because usually, certainly, I mean, under Cotter at least, but the Scotland teams of the recent past, it's pretty much all, it's been Dunbar, it's Dunbar and Jones. Yep. And Dunbar is the defensive linchpin, masterminding the defence from 12, and he also carries very, you know, he gets very little ball. So it was an odd sort of choice for me to put. I mean, I thought I knew Jones could play at 12 because he has played at 12, but he played, you know, he's playing more of a sort of second 5/8 kind of 12 rather than marshalling the defence. And then a lot of the talk was about Harris's defence from 13, which just seemed like an odd. It didn't seem to suit because the way that Scotland certainly play when there's Russell, you know, we've talked about it before that Dunbar doesn't get enough ball at 12 to sort of crash ball because quite often Russell's looping and the ball's either going straight out to Hogg or to Seymour and, you know, occasionally to number 13. And obviously we saw the odd occasions that the ball got tossed at 13. They were, you know, hospital passes and Harris probably won't have thanked them. So yeah, the service didn't do him any favours. But it did seem like an odd way around to select him. And I mean, I'm guessing it was because he couldn't get either Dunbar or Taylor fit in time, and that was the way that he had to, you know, he didn't fancy maybe playing Harris at 12, maybe he doesn't play much at 12 if he's more of a 13/winger. That was kind of the way it had to go. But then you think, well, you could maybe stick another centre on the bench and put Horn in at 12, and Horn, you know, Horn and Jones have played together, it'd be a bit lightweight, but the Welsh, you know, that Welsh backline are not massive. Whereas,
yeah,
there's a few people talking about maybe this week. You know, it could be Horn and Jones, and that might be a little bit lightweight against the French monsters. But I guess it'll depend on Dunbar's fitness. I feel for.
He's back, isn't he? I think Taylor's definitely gone back to Saracens, but I think
the suspicion is that he's going to be there or thereabouts. I mean, I feel for Harris because he's not had many chances, and everybody's writing him off now. But the problem is that Scotland can't afford a bad game, so it's almost like, you know, back in the old days, if De Luca had a bad game, he would get the next game as a chance to kind of redeem himself.
Yeah,
because there wasn't really that many, and you know, people have their opinions on Nick, whatever. I always rated him as a, certainly for Edinburgh, he was a great player, and maybe he never fulfilled his potential or whatever. But in an international shirt, you know, he would throw the silly passes or make the mistakes. I digress. But we're now in a situation in this tournament where we had high hopes that we can't afford that to happen. We've got too much depth in the centres, even with Taylor injured. You know, there's still Dunbar, there's still Bennett, still potentially Grigg, who are all familiar with the other players around them, who could slot in there. So it's almost, it's harsh on Harris, but Townsend can't really afford to give him a chance to redeem himself.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a fair shout. What, you haven't given us your sort of, wait, is that your reason sort of assessment of the game, or Rory, or you got any other sort of?
Well, no, my recent assessment of the game, it's strange because we've been looking, I've been reading check through all the comments and stuff to make sure that everybody's on their best behaviour, and there's been a lot of reading to do, and it's tricky because actually it seems easier to change the backs, but the issue was probably the forwards. But actually the forward pack, you can't, they actually do need a chance to redeem themselves, to turn it around. I mean, you could swap Toulis for Gilchrist, but it's not gonna, you wouldn't think it'll make that much of a difference if Toulis if Toulis comes back to the form that he showed before and steps up. Likewise, McAnally started well but went off the boil. If they can get the line out clicking, the scrum was okay. Maybe like to see a bit more carrying from the props, but to be honest, the French scrum is probably going to keep them well enough occupied. I think they'll make a change at number 8. I'd imagine it'll probably be Ryan Wilson comes in, but there's an argument to say that maybe Hamilton or Denton, I'm not sure what Hamilton's fitness is like at the moment. But the forwards, basically all they need a rocket to, because the backs are only going to get the time, that extra time that you were talking about earlier. they're only going to get that if the forwards have them going forward. Looking at the Price interception, you know, Scotland had been plugging away for 6 minutes with the ball pretty much, but they'd been largely going side to side, and you know, the demands on the scrum half in the way that Scotland play, they have to get the quick ball, and the scrum half has to be there to get that quick ball away because everything routes through 9 and 10. So it's quite a sort of, it's quite a focused way of playing. If your 9 and 10 have bad games, either one of them, let alone both of them, then it's going to sort of have a big knock-on effect through the rest of the team. And I mean, he looked a little bit, you know, he was tired getting to the rucks after 6 minutes, and he threw that because it was a long period of faces and they weren't able to break the defence and get moving forward. Other than that big grey charge, which we never saw any more of, and he, you know, so he took the two extra steps and threw the interception, and that was, you know, a different story from then.
Yeah, and he was throwing, I think with that pass he was throwing, it was a long looping pass to John Welsh at first receiver, which is just, that's, I know he did that great chip and chase, but that
the chip and chase was obviously on. So.
I thought Gordon Reid and John Welsh actually had a decent game. I know a lot of people have said they didn't carry particularly well, but they you know, they shored up the scrum. They came in and did the job that they were brought in to do. I think I would start them again and give them another chance.
Yeah.
I know that it's not what Tooney's looking for on his props. They're not going to carry the same way as Ferguson and Nell are, but I don't think a game against France and the sort of ridiculous, you know, the sort of elephants, the guy that France can play, you know, the guys that weigh a ton, I think, in either side of their front row are the kind, you know, that's not the time to stick Jamie Batty or even Simon Bergen on. You'll bring them on in the second half maybe, but I think the one thing that went well on Saturday was the scrum.
Yeah, I think you can't change the, I don't think you changed the front row purely for that reason. I think the scrum was, to all our surprise, the one positive that came out of the weekend. It was solid. We had parity, and every pundit in the land said if Scotland gets parity in the scrum, then it's game on. Didn't quite work out like that.
It was the one prediction I made on BBC Radio Wales which came true, which is that we didn't struggle in the scrum.
I listened to that. That was amazing, but possibly with the benefit of hindsight, possibly not that sensible.
No. the saving grace is that they paid me £30 and I had a lovely curry on Saturday night and a bottle of wine.
The buggers, they never paid me anything for going on the radio.
Oh.
I could hear who was the guy that they had on?
Ian Evans.
I could hear like the incredulity in his voice when you were, you know, you were predicting that didn't matter if they picked their first team, we would smash them anyway.
Yeah.
I think, you know.
Pooed my pants live on air in front of Malcolm Christie and Ian Evans.
Yeah, and they'll never have you back now because they'll be like,
well,
he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Well, I sort of thought if I was really controversial, the chances are that they would have me back.
Yeah, that's true. They'll get you back. They'll probably get a good phone in out of it or something afterwards.
Yeah, I thought, well, that's it. I did it for clicks. That's why I did it. Have you both had a chance to pick comment of the week? I've gone for I went for the smidge on John's ratings, who said some generous marks there. I'd have had Harris, Russell and Price on negative scores as they played like they wanted Wales to win at times. If no one else returns for injury or is called up, then Bennett for Harris and Laidlaw for Price are straight changes to make. Horn for Russell would give him the shock he needs. I thought Horn for Russell's probably a bit drastic. There's an argument for me for Laidlaw for Price just to steady the ship a little bit for a game. I don't know. I don't think that's too drastic. I think Laidlaw's capable of playing organised chaos.
Yeah, I mean, we were actually doing pretty well against France last year in Paris until Laidlaw got injured, and Laidlaw and Strauss got injured quite close together, and they were both having really good games. So, you know, I think there's certainly a possibility. I guess it'll depend how the guys go in training this week. I mean, there's not going to be too many people who will be disappointed if Price plays, but if Price plays and plays badly, you know, you wouldn't think he's going to get a third start.
No. One thing is, in terms of the ratings, there's been quite a bit of debate in the comments section and elsewhere about our ratings. John's been getting absolute pelters for giving out zeros, something I can fully sympathise with after last year's Calcutta Cup. I think there was a suggestion somewhere that if you give a zero for someone, then it's suggesting that they're not good enough to play rugby at all.
I've never played rugby.
Yeah, we've had a chat about this amongst ourselves, and what we would like you to do is to let us know what you think of the current system, or come up with your own one. We've had different suggestions so far, from gold, silver, bronze, a meat-based rating system with bacon as the top, as the best meat, right through to, I think, Rory, you were suggesting some sort of computer-generated heat map. The other thing we could do, which I think Al Kerr would like, because he is devastated at the thought of getting rid of these, is we could just do an explanation about what each score sort of means, possibly in an article. But if anybody's got any suggestions for how we should rate players in the future, then let us know in the comments section on the blog, Twitter, email, however you want to do it. We might give Al the final say on it, given that he sort of he didn't come up with player ratings as such, but he was the one that started it all off on the blog. So yeah, get in touch with you. If you like what we're doing, we're happy to carry on. It's just, is there a better way we could do this, or do we just need to explain ourselves? Clearly, 6 is Ross Ford, and 10 is, I think we've said, Dan Carter against the Lions. Maybe we just need to explain what 0 means.
We've got plenty of examples.
True. Rory, did you pick anything up from the blog?
Yes, I have. Well, I picked two because we were being picked up for not doing enough comments of the week. So I've got one comment which suggested that the problem was with Scotland was actually the fact that the shorts are blue. And that was from Doc Finlay. I think he might be right. I mean, Wales don't play in red shorts; they play in white shorts, right?
Yeah, the roof was shut. It was dark.
It was dark. I would also, there was a comment from Andy which I thought was probably summed up the kind of mood immediately after, which was people are entitled to show they're not happy at Scotland's Saturday's performance was a disgrace. Fans spend hard-earned money following and supporting the team and expect at the very least for it to be competitive. Nobody expects to win every game, but do expect full commitment with the basic things done correctly. Things need to change dramatically for next week, otherwise I don't see any remaining games being won. And I suppose, yeah, I would say that there's always a chance to win a game, even if you don't play particularly well. I mean, that's one thing that Scotland have been getting gradually better at over the last couple of years. Is actually grinding out the wins when they haven't played particularly well. Certainly, Glasgow are been great at that this season. They've only lost one game and haven't actually really played well yet. Apart from against Exeter in Europe. So, yeah, we just want to... I think it'll be a different thing against France at Murrayfield. For all the slatings that we get for being weak away from home, in recent years, the home record has been very good, and we should expect that they're going to know that, and they're going to want to show a bit of pride in front of their home fans, because they're going to know, they're not daft, these players. They know that the fans are going to be extremely disappointed in them. And I mean, they've come out this week and they've started sort of facing the press. We'll probably hear in the next few days some interviews and things, but with what did they call it? Honesty sessions. Or something.
An honesty session. Well, just before we came on, I saw on Instagram that Stuart Hogg was hiding under a staircase, letting off an air horn and scaring Ryan Wilson. So I think we can safely say that things are back to normal in the Scotland camp.
The shoes on the other foot, though.
Yeah.
you see Barkley's not himself. He's not doing it. He's got the mantle on.
That's it.
Maybe Hoggy'll be the captain for the next game.
Well, maybe that might be a good thing. Maybe the fact that Barkley's now focusing on his captaincy role rather than plotting which wheelie bins are the best place to hide. Yeah. John, did you pick any comments from the blog?
Yeah, I sure did. I also had on the other forum, I had a lovely suggestion that I banned myself from my own forum, which was well received. Needless to say, I'm not, but hey. So yeah, my favourite was Falkirk, who, again, on my player ratings piece, who has obviously read my bio and has said, I'll paraphrase here, you should have stayed in them fancy toilets in Butte. Your assessments on giving players zero is pure cack. Do you think players go out to play badly as they did? Bad day in Cardiff. Look for positives, not negatives, or you'll never go forward. I'm as disturbed by the performance as anyone, but zero ratings for players are not helpful. And I absolutely love the first reply from Ginger McGee. Straight up, just about an hour later, he says, not the nicest way to say you do not agree. Just absolutely brilliant.
Can I just check, John? Is Butte known for its toilets?
Butte has some fairly spectacular Victorian toilets, which are one of the tourist attractions of the island. I assumed he wasn't talking about the old sheds up at the meadows, which everyone was delighted when they burned down. They were fairly spectacularly ranked. No, the Victorian toilets are right next to the ferry terminal in Butte, and they're very, very pretty if you're on the island. I'm doing my bit for Butte tourist industry just now. If you're on the island and fancy a visit, pop along and see the sights of the lavies.
Oh, nothing if not educational as well. Anything else to add, either of you? Are we done, do you think? Have we? Can you take any more?
I would just like to say good luck to the guys on Sunday against France. Let's have something pleasant for Brodie and Ian to write about next week.
Brodie and Ian will be joining us on the podcast. We try and get guys who've been to cover the games for us on the podcast immediately after, just because they tend to have little snippets of things they've seen. I think that's how we found out that Warren Gatland was having a midlife crisis. So I'll be Brodie and Ian with me next week. That's it from us. We haven't had time to cover the women's game or the under-20s. You can read Kevin Miller's player ratings on the under-20s game over on the blog. We are always looking for people to cover the women's games. If it's something you'd be interested in, please get in touch. You can email Rory at scottishrugbyblog.co.uk or contact us as Twitter, Facebook, however you want to do it. For the moment, that's it from us. Hopefully, more positives to talk about next week. Bye from me and bye from Rory and John.
Bye.
Bye now.
We believe in Gregor as one by the way. Come on to Scotland. Come on, everyone.